Yes. Hello, hello. I have some things that we need to talk about, okay? I have some notes. That's how serious today is, okay? Let me just gather a bit of energy from my ancestors because we need to talk. We need to talk. I have taken a bit of time to kind of just be in observation mode. Something that I do quite often is that I always take some time away from social media because social media is not my job. It's very important that I make that clear. Social media is not my job. Content creation, as the kids like to call it, that is not my job. I have so many things that happen offline. I have a consulting firm where I consult with different types of people. And I'm a coach as well, and I'm a speaker, and I do so many different things. Anyway, I've been taking a bit of time away just so I can observe, so I can write, so I can continue to have some conversations offline. And I have so many different observations that I want to share with you today within the context of the work that I do. But I think this is going to be very useful for you as well. Because with my work in general, I like to have a very solutions-focused approach. I think it's all well and good to have a rant, to just kind of get everything out there. But I'm also finding, just for me personally, and I would love to know what you think. Just for me personally, I'm much more interested in the solutions that people have around some of the conversations that we're having, around some of the very, whether they are controversial conversations, non-controversial conversations, etc., etc. I think it's just important that we move away from the us versus them style dialogue, which is the kind of dialogue that tends to get most of the likes, is the kind of dialogue that, people want something that's kind of inflammatory. People want something that is controversial, typically. People want something that is quite scandalous. People want an enemy. People want, to exercise their self-righteousness, which is what we're going to be talking about today. But I don't think that's useful. I think there can be a time and place for that. And I do think people need to channel their frustration in some kind of way. But I personally am much more interested in the solutions. I'm much more interested in thinking, okay, what can people do? So that's why I do the work that I do and have been for the past 6 years. I want to take you through three stages, okay? And if you've worked with me before in any capacity, maybe you're one of my private clients, but maybe you've been to my workshop, or just maybe you've engaged with my work long enough, you will know that when I speak about things like self-censorship, especially, I speak about it in three phases, okay? When you are moving from the phase of finding that you're censoring yourself in any capacity, that you're finding yourself withholding what you know to be true to you. You're afraid that by you actually making your stance very clear, that you're going to be ostracized in some kind of way, that you're going to be cancelled, a word that we all at this point in time understand intuitively. There really is a process to be able to even just move out of that. And I see it as three things. One of the first things is awareness, and I'm going to take you through all of this just very briefly. One of the first things is awareness. One of the second things, okay, is responsibility. And don't worry, I'm going to take you through this. And one of the last things is expression. I truly believe that without awareness, responsibility, and expression, it will be very fucking difficult for you to even understand the nature of how self-censorship shows up for you and how you can move away from that. So that's just a very simple way that I like to kind of make this idea a little bit more tangible. So I'm going to share some of those things with you. But I also wanted to speak a little bit about people's communication style because in my time, just pulling back a little bit from posting all the time on social media, engaging with things on social media, I've just been realizing that the reason a lot of people are having a very difficult time in navigating whatever the fuck we're experiencing right now, whether you want to call it cancel culture, I prefer to call it collective sabotage, and whatever you want to call it, I think a lot of people are very ineffective with their communication. Very ineffective. So I just wanted to speak a little bit about communication styles. And you might be coming into this conversation and thinking, what the fuck is Africa talking about? This is a conversation that focuses on solutions. So if you are someone that actually wants solutions to some of these things, then by all means stay. But if you are someone that just wants inflammatory conversations, you know, the us versus them bullshit dressed up as something else, then maybe this is not going to be for you. Because as I was saying before, there is a time and a place to rant. And I love, I love a good rant. I do. I love a good passionate rant, but it's not always effective. It's not always effective. And to be very honest, there are some people that I personally used to feel so inspired by because they were engaging with these very touchy conversations that no one wanted to touch. But I've seen that the very same people have firmly found themselves in a place of self-righteousness. And that's what sort of, that's just one of the things that urged me actually to have this conversation with you, because I want to make sure that as you express your frustration around some of these things, as you realize how fucking woke everyone has got, which I hate it when people say that everyone's so fucking woke these days. It's not true. There is truth to it, of course, because I wrote a fucking 4,000 word letter about it. But it's not the absolute truth. I think people end up going to so many extremes, and I don't always think it's useful. And something else that I've found is that a lot of people end up making that their sort of brand, if you will, because they've seen that it's the thing that gets people riled up. It's the thing that makes people so frustrated, but it's not actually teaching people to be better communicators. It's really not teaching people to be better communicators. So I wanted to start there. I think that's where we're going to start. And I'm just going to begin by posing a question, and then I'll take you through some of these things because it's the first stage of awareness that I was speaking of. I'm just going to ask the question, and it's okay if you don't know exactly how to answer it or exactly what it is, but I want to ask you, do you know what your default communication style actually is? And if you've worked with me, then you probably have an answer to this. But I want to have a conversation with you about this because I think it actually is important. So just have a think about that. Do you know what your default communication style is? And I'm going to help you out a little bit by telling you the four main types, okay? The first one is passive. Second one is aggressive. Third one is passive aggressive. And the fourth one is assertive. And I always say this to my clients, and I'm gonna say it to you, okay? Please do not give me your PR answer. No one gives a shit about what you wish you were, okay? We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that. I don't want your PR answer. I don't want you to talk about what you wish you were or what you think you are. Just be very honest so that this can actually be useful for you. I'm going to repeat them again. So the four main types are passive, and then there's aggressive, then there's passive aggressive, and then there is assertive. The reason why I'm asking you to just start having a think about what your communication style is, because in our conversations around self-censorship or the culture war or cancel culture or collective sabotage, as I like to call it, whatever it might be, all right? One thing that is missed all the time, and I know it's a unsexy thing to speak about, it's not really spicy for people, it's not inflammatory, it's the communication, because what we're actually seeing is a communication breakdown. It's a relational and communication breakdown. A lot of people don't even know how to communicate with themselves, let alone other people. And I'm not just talking about your digital interactions. I'm talking about your interpersonal relationships, which is where I think has to be the default training ground for you becoming a better communicator, for you handling conflict, for you being able to actually say, you know what, I don't agree with that. At the dinner table, with your lover, with your parents, with the people that have always known you, that's the place that you have to exercise your identity shift. That is the place where you have to take the most risks. So if you have no fucking idea what type of communicator you are, so you can see if it's working for you, you are always going to be struggling. And another thing about that is when you have no idea what type of communicator you are, that's when you begin to confuse self-censorship with a social filter. All right. And I know I'm throwing a lot at you, but don't worry, I'm going to save this. So we'll come back to it and we're going to come back to your communication style. But a lot of people, and I see this with my clients, with people that I just speak to generally, with the comments that people share with me here, a lot of people will label, because now they have this awareness of the concept of self-censorship and how it works and what it even looks like intuitively, which I think is good, because we need that. We need the language to be able to articulate our internal and external experience, right? But labeling every single fucking thing as self-censorship is not useful. Please remember that. Labeling everything as self-censorship is not useful, because sometimes it could just be you using your social filter. Because not everything needs to be said all the fucking time everywhere. Just because you have an opinion and a thought and an idea and a concept and a critique and a blah, 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 and it does not mean that once you externalize it and it's shut down or rejected that this is self-censorship. No. Sometimes it's because you have failed to use your social filter correctly. Please remember this. Self-censorship means a very specific thing. And a lot of us do not know how to discern between using our social filter, which is a good thing, because depending on your audience, depending on the environment, depending on the sensitivity of the situation, you will find yourself being very fucking ineffective with your communication, then labeling it as self-censorship. No, that's not what that is. That's not what that is. A lot of us do not know how to discern between self-censoring and using a social filter. Okay? We're gonna talk about it. We're gonna talk about it. Don't worry. So, first one is passive. So when you are passive, and now I'm going to read out the details, and I really want you to pay attention. I really want you to pay attention to whether this applies to you. And even if it feels uncomfortable to be like, you know what, I think this could actually be me, I really want you to fucking own that. This is not the time and place to feel sorry for yourself, to shame yourself, to be like, oh my goodness, I've been doing... Just take on the role of the observer. That's the invitation that I'm going to make right now. Take on the role of the observer and just be very neutral about everything that I'm going to read. Don't be over emotional about it. Don't be embarrassed about it. Just listen and see whether it applies to you. And also, as I was saying earlier, do not lie to yourself. Do not give yourself the PR response of who you would like to be. Be very honest so that we can understand whether and why your communication is currently ineffective or effective, okay? So if you have said that you are passive, these are usually the things that show up for people that are passive in their communication style. And even if you didn't think passive applies to you, just tell me if this feels like it resonates a little bit. So when your default communication style is passive, you tend to be quiet. You don't seek attention. You don't share your needs or express your feelings. You act indifferent in debate. You have an inability to say no. And also another way that you show that you're passive, it's not just about what you say, it's also your demeanor. So you usually have a poor posture. We think communication is just about what we say. It is so much more than that. It is also about your physical and just your demeanor in general. And when you're passive, you tend to give in to others. So this might look like agreeing with things that you don't actually agree with. You say yes, depending on if the majority thinks in this way, then you're going to join the majority. You never allow yourself to really take a strong stance on anything. And speaking of demeanor, you usually have a very apologetic demeanor. And this is a very specific thing because it's not about what you say. You could be saying all of the right things, but you have a very apologetic air about you just everywhere you go. Maybe you even find yourself saying, oh, sorry, all the time. just for no reason. For no reason at all. And also you find it difficult to maintain eye contact with people. So this is if you're a passive communicator, all right? And also because a lot of this is context dependent, you might find yourself being one of these communication styles in one area, and in another area, you're completely different. So that's something to bear in mind as well, okay? Another thing about people who are passive as their default communication style is that, as I said, they rarely take a strong stance or assert themselves. So in the context of, let's say, cancel culture and self-censorship, these tend to be the people that are the most frustrated and so resentful. These tend to be the people that are dragged back and forth by bad faith activists, for example, the people that are shamed into, you know, the people that are told they should feel shame and guilt by default because of their race, because of their gender, because of their sexuality, the people that are forced into cash apping strangers. oh God, that whole fucking cash app thing is the people that are, yeah, forced into cash apping strangers because you've been told that someone has just given you vigorous emotional labor in the comment sections, so you owe them money. If this is you, you might just be passive. So you end up dealing with a lot of built up anger and resentment. You have so much resentment, but again, you rarely express any of this. You're just very quiet, very apologetic, but inside, under here, it's an entire fucking volcano of anger and resentment and shame and guilt. So yeah, let's maybe the Cash App example, you haven't done it, but there's something happening in there that's quite similar. So that's passive. Okay, the next communication style, which I'm very fascinated by, is aggressive. A lot of people would never say that they are aggressive as their default. They would never say that because we have a very specific idea of what it looks like to be an aggressive person. But let me just read these out and let's see if you can see yourself in this. Because if I continue to use that example and that sort of archetype of the bad faith activists who has a big platform online and they, you know, use shame and guilt as a way to kind of bring people in. They don't really give a shit about solutions, but they're very loud and they're very, you know, they use all the right language, blah, 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 all of the things. I usually see this in a lot of those people, but I also see it in the people that are on the extreme side of that, right? Let me use the example of the people that self-identify as being anti-woke, for example, right? They are usually the kind of people that think they are completely different from the people they speak about. But if you look a little bit closer, you will see that they behave in the exact same way, but it's just dressed up differently. And you will see this in those people that say things like, I just say it how it is, right? I just say it how it is. This is just who I am. I don't hold back, you know, people that say shit like that, but they tend to be so ineffective in how they communicate. So ineffective. So when it comes to the aggressive communication style, these are just some of the things that fall under that. Argumentative. You might tend to dominate conversations, even when you don't realize you're doing it, you tend to dominate conversations, or you feel this kind of compulsion to dominate and to assert your opinion. They criticize quite a lot. They blame quite a lot. They attack others. They're very controlling. They're very demanding, entitled. They're not afraid to challenge others. And here's the thing, you might not be all of those things, by the way. You don't have to be all of those things to be aggressive in your communication style. You can be one or a few of the things. And here's the thing about people that are aggressive as their default communication style. One of the gifts about people like this is that they're not afraid to challenge others. So that's where you could see that as a gift. But here's the thing. They're not afraid to challenge others, but they often do so in an unproductive and ineffective way. So I've just spoken about that, right? They are the people that will, you know, say things like, I just say it how it is. They're the people that are very quick to criticize everyone else. They're the kinds of people that are on the extreme side of saying things like, you know, prioritizing logic over feelings, which in some contexts, of course, we can all understand, but they tend to be on the extreme side of that, right? So even when they do need to be more compassionate and they do need to be more empathetic, they're so committed to this idea of logic over everything that they become so ineffective to the point where, and tell me if you've seen this, whether in yourself or other people, to the point where people like this with the aggressive communication style, they could be saying all the right things. They could be saying all the right things, but there's a huge disconnect. There's a huge disconnect because they have on some level convinced themselves that they need to be dominant in every single interaction so that they end up being self-righteous, right? So it's very interesting. It's very interesting how this ends up playing out actually. And another gift about these people is that they tend to be quite straightforward and precise. But again, this is where they can lack empathy and compassion and emotion when they actually do really need it to be able to speak to the people they're trying to speak to. And they can also tend to be very defensive. They might be the kinds of people that say things like, oh, I'm open to criticism. I'm open to arguments. You know, when no one is challenging them, they're very open to being challenged, right? Theoretically and in their own mind. But the moment someone challenges them, the moment someone critiques them, the moment someone says, actually, I don't agree with that, instantly they become so defensive, and they even become really venomous, especially when they're really intelligent people who know how to use their words and they know how to sort of manipulate a situation. Very interesting, right? Because in that binary of the woke and anti-woke, people like this usually end up behaving in the exact same way. It's quite scary how they can end up behaving in the exact same way. And I was saying this earlier about something that I do often is just I stand back from social media a little bit and I just observe, because it's also not my job to post things all the time. And I really do begin to find that people that I even admired at a time, people that I found at a time where I really appreciated that sort of stance and I really appreciated that aggression in some way because I needed to access that within myself. But then I found that over time, people like this sort of end up becoming a caricature of themselves, and they end up becoming very condescending and they end up becoming very aggressive in their approach. So they could be saying all of the right things, but there's a really sort of, I can't describe it. And it's a shame actually that it's ineffective. Basically, they become so ineffective that they end up creating their very own echo chamber. And then the same cycle just repeats again and again and again. So this is why I wanted to have this conversation with you and to just talk about some of these things so that you can maybe think about it in relation to yourself and how you communicate, to be wary of, you know, how easy it can actually be to fall into a state of self-righteousness when actually you are against self-righteousness. So it's important to understand what your communication style is, right? Next communication style, and this is actually the most common, passive aggressiveness. I know that it was mine for a very long time, especially in my romantic relationships. And I've mentioned this quite a bit. If you've worked with me personally, you would have heard me talk about it, or if you listen to my podcast. But you know when I said earlier how these communication styles can show up in one area and in other areas it might not show up at all, right? For me, passive aggressiveness showed up mainly in my romantic relationships because that was the one main area, and I still have to look out for this, people. That was the one main area where I was very anti-conflict. I didn't know how to be in conflict in a healthy way with my partner. I thought conflict by default was the enemy. So I would just hold things in. And I'm going to read out some of the things that might present themselves for people that think that they might be passive aggressive. So you mask your real feelings and you seem neutral and passive on the surface, but you harbor resentment and you express it indirectly. Oh my goodness, this was me. This was me seeming neutral on the surface. Everything is fine. And just harboring so much resentment until the resentment was just... Another way that you might be able to identify whether passive aggressiveness might be your default communication style is if you use subtle, if you use subtle sabotage to get even. Let me have a sip of tea for that one, because that was, I was no stranger to that in my romantic relationships and probably even with my family as well, because I didn't know how to communicate. I found any type of confrontation and conflict so uncomfortable. And because of, so I don't always think everything links to childhood, but this one was very much linked to my childhood, where I always had this underlying feeling of I'm going to be in trouble. So that feeling of I'm going to be in trouble made me hold anything in. So anytime that I felt like something wasn't okay, or I wanted to express my feelings and my needs or my objections, or to say, actually, I don't want that, or to express my boundaries, I felt as if I express these things, I'm going to be in trouble. So I would hold all of these things in, but they would have to express themselves in some way, right? So on the surface, I would appear neutral, but the resentment would just continue to eat me alive until I ended up sabotaging my relationships, not just romantic. At a point in time, I thought this was just happening in my romantic relationships. Turns out it was happening in all of my interpersonal relationships. Any sign of conflict, I would run. Any sign of conflict, if I wasn't running, I would stay, but I would sabotage in a very subtle way. Ooh. So that could be one way that you can identify if you're a passive aggressive person. And with all of these, it's very interesting because resentment will be the most consistent thing in these communication styles, because they're not really effective. And someone said, sounds like passive aggressive goes hand in hand with people pleasing. Absolutely. Absolutely it does. It would be a given that if you're passive, then yeah, people pleasing is just going to be a part of it. Self-sacrifice is going to be a part of it. But if you're passive aggressive, that's also going to be part and parcel as well, depending on the relationship style that you're in. And with passive aggressive, you might also find that you overuse sarcasm, right? So you can't seem to ever have a serious conversation where you take someone else's needs on board or express your needs or express your discomfort. There's always so much joking and sarcasm to the point where it's really actually starting to cause maybe not very serious conflict in your relationships, but it's causing a disconnect. You just find yourself using a lot of sarcasm as the default. That could be part of that. Being condescending, someone said, being condescending. Maybe your words don't align with your actions. Maybe you find yourself complaining quite a lot, complaining, never really having solutions, never really wanting to hear solutions sometimes, actually. And also, if you're a passive aggressive person, you might find it difficult taking responsibility for your actions. So you can end up being defensive, which is usually one of the things that happens when you're an aggressive person. You're overly defensive. So when you're passive aggressive, because you find it difficult to take responsibility for your actions, you then become very defensive. You try to justify some of your actions. And if you're a very smart, intellectual type of person, very good with words, then you find yourself really, really able to avoid taking responsibility in some very interesting ways. So that was passive aggressive. So the three communication styles that we've gone through, if you've missed them already, watch this replay, please. First one is passive. Second one is aggressive. Third one is passive aggressive. Now, people, the communication style that we all want to be aiming for within the context of self-censorship, within the context of your interpersonal relationships, within the context of navigating cancel culture, within the context of you shifting your identity in some kind of way, within the context of being misunderstood and being okay with that, we need to learn to make being an assertive communicator the default. Being an assertive communicator is the default that we all want to embody. And I'm very fucking serious about this because I've spent the past 2 years, really trying to figure a lot of this shit out, really trying to move from the culture war conversation, blah, 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 just all of this bullshit, and really wanting to find out what is behind a lot of this relational breakdown. Why do people really not know how to communicate with each other? But then I realized it's not about each other. It's not about other people. People don't even know how to communicate with themselves. People have very weak internal boundaries. And I'm going to go into the details of being an assertive communicator, but I'm just really trying to lay the ground here, because being an assertive communicator is going to have to be a non-negotiable. If you want this to be negotiable, you're going to have to exit, because it's not negotiable. I say this to my clients. I say this to anyone who speaks with me. I say this to anyone who wants to, you know, move out of self-censorship, but they want to do it in a comfortable way. I'm sorry. Stop seeking comfort in any of this. To be an assertive communicator, you are going to have to take risks. So many of us think all of this should just be comfortable. You know, maybe you watch my videos, you listen to a podcast, you hear a talk, you whatever the fuck else, and you feel motivated, you feel inspired. But guess what? Once that motivation wanes, you are back to square one. You are back to square one, because way too many of us are committing to communication styles that don't fucking work. You are going to have to take risks, right? You are going to have to risk your interpersonal relationships changing. You are going to have to risk and shake up the perception that people have of you. Not even the people online, the people that know you in your personal offline life. And not many of us are willing to risk that perception, but you need to be assertive, okay? You need to be assertive. To be more of an assertive communicator, and I should also add that a lot of people think they are an assertive communicator, but they're actually more aggressive than they realize. That's also something to note down and to remember. A lot of people really want to believe, yes, I'm assertive. Yes, but they're actually more aggressive in their approach than they realize. Think about the people that I was speaking about earlier, right? The people that have the platforms, the people that speak out, the people that go against the grain, the people that tell it how it is. You know, you have my heart. The people that I'm speaking about right now do absolutely have my heart. You know, my independent thinkers, my free thinkers, they tend to be more aggressive than they realize, all right? So to be an assertive communicator, it means that you have a healthy expression of your ideas and your feelings, a healthy expression. It's not dominant. It's not overbearing. It's not defensive. It's not entitled. It's a healthy, grounded expression of your ideas and your feelings. And it's open. It's not restrictive. And it's not harsh. Okay, because I think harshness, there's a time and place for that. But when harshness becomes your default, you can quickly find yourself in the mode of self-righteousness and being very condescending in your approach, which then leads to you finding yourself attracting certain dynamics, and it's a shit show. It's very ineffective. So when you are assertive, the baseline, and please write this down and just try and remember it. When you're actually a truly assertive person, you are grounded in your approach. And you don't necessarily have to be the loudest, most dominant person, because that's another misconception about being assertive. That's another misconception about being a confident person who is able to take on this culture or anything else, right? That you have to be the loudest. That couldn't be further from the truth. That could not be further from the truth. And this can, everything I'm talking about can also apply to people that are, let's say if you're in the creative world, let's say you're an artist, let's say you do some kind of creative work. People in those fields also find very smart ways to censor themselves. It might not be self-censorship in the political context, but they censor their ideas, they censor their expression, and they're very passive with that censorship, right? So we all, regardless of who you are and what walk of life you're in, being an assertive communicator is so much more than what you say. So much more. It's about your body language. It's about what you convey. It's about your demeanor. It's even about your silence. It's also about what you don't say. So, and healthy expression of ideas and feelings is one of the things that you can begin to start to embody. On a physical level, there's also eye contact. This is an interesting one because depending on what culture you're from, maintaining eye contact and not maintaining eye contact looks different for everyone. It doesn't always mean the same thing. So in some cultures, including my own on some level, I'm from Zimbabwe in Africa, when you're speaking to elders or speaking to some people, there can be traditions where you sort of look away as you're not supposed to maintain eye contact. So do take this one with a pinch of salt. But for the most part, to practice being more assertive, when you are speaking to people, try and maintain eye contact. I'm not saying stare at me. Please make sure you blink, okay? I don't know why I find this funny. Please make sure you blink in the process, because you don't want to end up, you don't want to, okay? So that's just one thing on being assertive. And also, when a person is assertive, they understand and communicate their limits and boundaries without being overly aggressive or defensive, okay? There's a thin line, a very thin line between being assertive and being aggressive. Please remember that. Another example, you have a clear, strong voice. This is something that comes up all the time when I work with people or I speak to people and they really think that all of this is about what you actually say. It's not. It's also about things like, and these are the things that I wish people spoke about when people talk about speaking your truth, when people sort of give scripts on what you could say. And I do that too. I share things and ideas on what you could say, but I'm very specific when I do that. I always like to remind people that there's so much more to it. It's also about your tone. It's also about making sure that you're not rushing yourself to say certain things. That's why I think offline, the real world, that's where the best testing ground is. But a clear, strong voice is something that you will have to practice to be a more assertive speaker. And it's much easier to have a strong, clear voice when you are having a conversation that is not really controversial in any kind of way, when you're not being put on the spot in any kind of way, where you're not being asked a question that is slightly inflammatory or asked to give your opinion on something that is sort of inflammatory as well. But you have to be able to practice having a clear, strong voice when you're putting forward your stance. Because as we were saying before, people that are passive, they tend to not take a strong stance on anything. They tend to act indifferent in you know, when debate is happening or people are having a conversation. They will either be completely silent or they will agree with the majority. The next time that happens, and of course, you know your life best, you know your audience best, you know your situation best, and you know your own internal environment around what you're able to handle and what you can't. But I would invite you actually challenge yourself. The next time that you're having an in-person conversation, even if it's a very small shift in how you choose to respond, say whatever you're saying in a clear, strong voice and do not rush yourself. Just try it. please just try it and report back and let me know. And I know that this can sound like a small thing, because all of us want big, sort of big audacious things to go out there into the world and do, but most of us won't fucking do it, because there's not going to be many opportunities for the really big things, but there will be the subtle everyday conversations. The conversation that you're going to have later on today with someone in your household or one of your friends or something you see, or, but it doesn't have to be online. I really don't want you to focus on doing any of these things online, okay? And that's a whole other conversation we're going to be having at another time, because there's just so much to that. But really practice cultivating a very clear and strong voice. And also, an assertive person won't allow other people to manipulate them. And I know this can seem like a given, like it's a very obvious thing, but being manipulated happens in very subtle ways, right? When, for example, you're having a conversation with someone and you're made to doubt your opinion, even though the other person hasn't really offered you anything substantial or anything concrete. Maybe you're just intimidated by their physical presence. Maybe you're intimidated by who they are as a person. You can find yourself, a lot of us are easier to manipulate than we would like to believe. And I think the past 2 years has really shown us that. I mean, I saw that myself, especially in the summer of 2020. I mean, I speak about this fucking summer all the time. But I think that was one of the biggest moments that I saw just how easy I had become to manipulate, because I was more hyper-focused on, and without even realizing, because a lot of this shit is subconscious, I was more hyper-focused on the identity of the person introducing or giving me information than the actual substance of their information, right? And then I realized that I'd actually become quite easy to manipulate just based on those things. I was placing importance in things that didn't really mean much and didn't make much sense in the grand scheme of things. And I hadn't really made being an assertive communicator a mindset, in the sense that I've always been quite assertive in how I externalize and in how I speak and in how I conduct myself. But I think being an assertive communicator is actually something you have to embody on a mindset level before it even becomes something that you externalize. And I think that was one of my biggest lessons. So that's something to consider. But being honest, and I will repeat this again, being honest about what your default communication style is can be huge. I know it can sound so simple, but just being able to identify that, oh my goodness, I didn't know I was this passive. I had no idea I was this passive as a default, right? Since I started to be very clear on my communication style, to realize that even though my default is to be assertive, just behind it lies passive aggressiveness, which, because I know my mind well enough and I know my actions well enough and I'm able to catch myself well enough, I don't allow it to consume me in my conversations. And I know that the one area, I hope this is as useful to you as it is to me, because it's been an absolute fucking game changer. Okay, just being able to understand when I'm in situations to be like, okay, I'm being more passive in this situation. I need to assert myself. And to know that me being assertive isn't always useful in every single situation, because that might be me actually being aggressive when what I need to do is take the back seat a little bit, when what I need to do is listen a little bit. Maybe this is an instance where my opinion is not really important. Important, because what I do think and what I've come to realize is that just because you have an opinion, and sometimes even if it's a fully formed opinion, it might not be important within the context of what is happening. So it might not always be useful. And I think when people try to insert their opinion, even when it's fully formed in their own mind, and then it's rejected or they see that it's not useful, they can tend to then label it as self-censorship. But I don't think that's self-censorship. That's you failing to have used your social filter in an appropriate way, because self-censorship is a very specific thing. It's a very specific thing. And I never want you to walk through the world calling everything fucking self-censorship. I'm being self-censored. I'm self-censoring. No, that is not always the case. Sometimes, most of the time, some of us, especially in our interpersonal relationships, sometimes we are just failing to use our social filter appropriately. Because there can be times where you're using your social filter and you're still taking some kind of risk and expressing yourself, and it actually works. And I would think actually that's what I do with a lot of my work. I think that's why even sometimes when I'm speaking about things that could be quite polarizing, I think the reason why I'm able to connect with people is that I do, at the end of the day, I do know my place. There are, listen, there are so many things that I have an opinion on. There are so many things that I have an opinion on, but I know that my opinion on this is not fucking useful. It's not going to add anything. And also, you need to be able, I'm deviating a little bit, but it all ties into this. It's still all about communication. You need to know what hill you're not willing to die on. Because some people think in order to exercise their right to free speech or all of these wonderful things, that they have to die on every single fucking hill. No, because that's when you end up being very ineffective. That's when you end up being aggressive in your approach, because you're trying to dominate every single conversation, every single area, instead of using your social filter to say, actually, I could say something around this, and maybe I even have something that could be useful. But you know what? I'm going to hold my tongue a little bit. Maybe this is in a moment that is quite turbulent, so it's not going to be received in the way that I intended. So in this case, I'm not actually being self-censored. I'm actually using my own social filter to discern, okay? I say this fully understanding that there's such an aggressive culture online where self-censorship is very much fucking happening. Hello, which is why I do the work that I do and I share all of these things with you. But I want us to know the difference. We have to know the difference. You don't have to die and perform. You don't need to do a concert on every hill. Some of us are dressing up and feeling like we need to do a full-blown 90-minute show on every hill. No. I have my hills. You have to pick yours. You have to pick yours. You have to. And that's what being an assertive communicator is about, because the communication is not just about this. It's not about what you're just saying. It's it's here. Which hill are you going to dance on? Okay? Pick one. Or a couple. And with all of the others, really tune into your social filter. Really tune into your social filter. And if some of you are hearing the social filter, and you have no fucking idea what I'm talking about, I will give you some very clear, I'll give you some very clear definitions of what it actually is, okay? Just so you can know the actual difference between, self-censorship and that. So a social filter is something that we all use intuitively. Okay, it's something that we all know and use intuitively, and it requires you to think before you speak. That's the simplest way that I can put it. And you use it every single day, in every single moment. And I'm sure you can think of some examples right now, right? I always like to use the example of, you know, let's say someone in your family has just got a new haircut, and it's a really fucking terrible. It's a terrible haircut. Your loved one, your very close loved one, has just come to the dinner, to the family gathering. You haven't seen each other in a very long time. They've just come in. You're having a conversation, and they've had a haircut. And you think many things are running in your mind. Many things are happening in your mind. There's so many things you could say. You could make a joke. You can make a joke. You could ask them a question that is obviously going to signal that you want to say something about this cut. You could comment on it. You could move your eyes up to the haircut, even though they're speaking to you. So many things are happening, so many thoughts. A social filter allows you to know that you you guys are terrible with your comments. A social filter allows you to say, this is my auntie. This is my auntie. This is my elder. I have respect for her. I can't make a joke. I will not be sarcastic about this. I'm just not going to comment. I'm not going to say anything. If she says anything about the hair or she says, what do you think? I will say something nice because it would be very inappropriate for me to say what I really want to say, right? It wouldn't be necessary. I would just be hurting someone for just no reason when I could actually just say, it looks really good. And I could go about my day. They go about their day. They feel good. That's a very simple example of how you use your social filter on a day-to-day. Not everything needs to be expressed. Not everything needs to be expressed, right? When you walk past someone and maybe they don't smell great, right? You might think in your mind, do I say something? Do I wince? Do I? Maybe you're standing next to them, right? But a social filter allows you to think, you know what? This is not my fight. This is a stranger. Maybe it's not necessary for me to do that. You know, it would be quite rude for me to do that. Whatever the details might be, you use your social filter every single day. But what we need to do is to bring awareness to that social filter, because for the most part, it's intuitive. It just sort of runs by itself, depending on your characteristics. It just runs by itself. It's automated, depending on your character, depending on your belief system, depending on your value system, depending on your boundaries, depending on what you think is acceptable or not acceptable. Also, cultural context is a part of that. So many different things, even your mental health. If you have, let's say, a mental illness, you might struggle to apply a social filter. I know that some people that, you know, because of neurodiversity as well, some people have a bit of a harder time exercising their social filter than others. So it's a very interesting thing once you actually bring awareness to it. But the point of me sharing this is to say a lot of us need to tune into our social filter, especially when it comes to difficult conversations. But when you lack, and this is really important, this is the piece that I want you to remember, and it's one of the pieces I'll leave you with actually. When you lack self-trust, when you're not able to use discernment, and what discernment means is the ability to judge well, judging what a situation needs, judging the context, judging the platform, knowing that if you really want to have an in-depth contextual conversation, it's probably not going to fucking happen in the comment section. So that's not a hill that you have to die on, right? If you lack discernment and you lack self-trust and you lack confidence in yourself and you lack the ability to assert yourself, your social filter, which is a good thing, can become self-censorship. Okay? Do we understand now why I had to take you through that process of understanding what a social filter is and why the biggest task you will have in all of this is really being able to differentiate between the two? Because when you stay too much in that mode of, maybe I shouldn't say this, maybe this isn't, you know, the right environment, maybe this isn't, okay, maybe not the right time, not the right people, not the right... If that becomes your default, that is not a social filter anymore. That is self-censorship. Because now you're doing it in every single situation, even when you have an opportunity to assert, right? And asserting does not always mean that it's going to be comfortable. You need to accept that you might be misunderstood, which is why I always talk about the gifts of being misunderstood. You have to accept that. You have to accept discomfort as a part of it. But that is just the beautiful price you have to pay to free yourself. Otherwise, you do end up in a constant state of self-censorship. Okay? So I hope that made sense. But if I'm going to leave you with anything, please start to, in your interpersonal relationships especially, I wouldn't want you actually to think that this is something that has to be done online, that this is something that you have to practice online, I will stick to my guns when I say your interpersonal relationships are the best training ground for all of this. And then your online behavior will be a byproduct of that, right? So never think that any of what I share or what I put out, just because I'm sharing it online, that it means that you need to start practicing this online and sharing all your unthinkable thoughts and, you know, resharing all those inflammatory things. Yes, you can choose to do that. But I will also tell you this, we're trying to do a lot of these things on platforms that don't even allow for that to happen, on very rigid platforms that flatten communication, that flatten the human experience. So I think, and it's not even just a thought, but I've seen this time and time again in my work and even within myself, that the starting point has to be in here. It has to be how you view yourself, how you are as a communicator, the decisions that you are going to make to change your communication style, because it's likely, it's very likely that whatever your default is, it's currently not really working for you in the way that you want it to. So being an assertive communicator is really important if you really want to push back against this culture or anything else in a way that is actually effective. All right. So your interpersonal relationships are, I will repeat it, the best training ground for that. And then of course, I do believe that whatever then happens online, and you can do both simultaneously, right? We're all at different stages. But I then do believe that your online life and whatever you share, that would just be a byproduct of something much, much deeper, something that can actually be exercised when you're face to face with people and you can feel in your nervous system that you're uncomfortable and you can actually feel that, okay, I'm being challenged and tested right now, but I have a commitment to being this type of communicator, so I'm going to practice it in real time. You know, you feel it more than when you just repost something or you create a meme or it allows it to be a more meaningful and sustainable process as well. But I'm so glad that you've spent time with me. I can't believe that I've been talking for, actually, that's a lie. Of course I can believe that I've been talking for this long. And it's actually not as long as I thought. But I don't want to overwhelm you too much. So I think I'm going to leave it there. So there were other things that I was going to speak about, but we can always do this another time. And for anyone that might be thinking, okay, so we've spoken, so in this chat, I've specifically emphasized the importance of not dying on every single fucking hill. You need to know what hill you're willing to die on. I speak about that hill in the context of values. I think it's much more important to know what your core values are. And I don't mean in a self-helpy, abstract, feel-good kind of way. And it can feel good, but I really do mean having a solid foundation of who you are as a person. What the fuck do you actually stand for? A lot of us have no idea. We think we know, but we have no idea. And so many of us have these fluffy, surface-level values that we don't even live by. Some people will say the value freedom, but in the past 2 years, when other people have been advocating for their freedom, you've been calling those people crazy. You've been calling them this and that just because their idea of freedom looks different from yours. So your freedom is, you know, negotiable. Your freedom is not really consistent. So I always think of this in the context. What I will do, because I could go into that and it will be a whole fucking thing, and I did a whole episode on that. Go to episode 18, which is titled, Do You Know What You Stand For? And I talk about the differences between your core values, which you actually have embodied and you live by, no matter what. You still remain flexible to learn and to change your mind, but we all have core values that drive who we are as people. And then we all have desired values, where we wish we were like this. So a lot of people, especially in the way that they present publicly, especially the kind of opinions they'll present publicly and their stance, it's through the lens of their desired values, who they wish they were. But when push comes to fucking shove, when push comes to shove, those values quickly go out of the fucking window because they realize, actually, I don't value that as much as I think, right? Because, for example, there are people that value popularity over truth, but they, in their own minds, they think they value truth, but they actually value popularity more. And it doesn't make you a bad person, doesn't make you any of those things, but it's just something to consider, because I realized for myself 2 years ago, especially in that fucking summer, that I had somehow found myself prioritizing popularity over truth, because truth meant that I would have to experience loss, that I would have to be uncomfortable, that relationships would have to change, that opportunities would probably stop because of who I was choosing to be and what I was choosing to do. So that's really something to think about, to just be very honest about what your values actually are, or whether you're living life through your embodied values and not actually making them a part of you and your actions. And I always say this, and I will leave you with this, that the results in your life will show you what it is you truly value. So a lot of us think we value all these other things, but what are the results in your life actually showing you that you value? Because I know for a long time, mine was showing me that I value very different things to what I say I do. So I think just by getting really fucking clear on that, you can actually start to have a better idea of what hill you're willing to die on, for example, if you choose, if you so choose to. But I hope that's helpful. I'm really going to go now, but do share your thoughts. And if you have any thoughts on anything I've just shared, do send me a DM or a voice note, because I always love voice notes. And when I can have a back and forth, I love doing that as well. But if you have watched from the beginning to the end, just thank you, really, because I mean, this was not short. But I know that it will be very useful, and please continue to share this information. It's not supposed to be hoarded. It's not supposed to just be kept between you and I. Share it with your people, your clients, your friends, your family, your students, especially your students. Please, especially your students. Anyway, I hope that you have a wonderful rest of the day wherever you are, and I will speak to you very soon.